The bottom line in business talk. Voice America Business.
Welcome to Managing Technology the Right Way with your host, Sun Jogal. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the hosts, guests, and callers. Now showing you how to manage technology the right way, here's Sun Jogal.
Morning, folks, and welcome to the show. It needs careful planning and flawless execution to make technology work for us. But how many times do we succeed? On this show, we invite business leaders and subject matter experts with extensive experience in technology management. The intent here is to learn from their experience and discuss better ways to manage technology. To learn more about the show, please visit talkshow.avval.com. That is talkshow.avval.com. Today's topic is the changing landscape of ERP solutions. Our guests for today's show are Walter Weir and Stanley Elbaum. Walter is the Chief Information Officer with the University of Nebraska. He is also the chair of the university's Financial System Task Force. Walter successfully led the implementation of SAP-based ERP environment, portfolio management system, data warehouse, and executive information system for the University of Nebraska. Walter is also the chair of the State of Nebraska Information Technology Commission technical panel, which has statewide responsibility for designing and implementing the state of Nebraska's computing, e-government, and e-commerce infrastructure and architecture. As the chair, he reports to the lieutenant governor. In this role, he was instrumental in the design and deployment of Network Nebraska. This is a high-speed OC48 scalable IP-based network that spans the entire state. Currently, there are over 250,000 active users connected. Previously, Walter was the Associate Vice President and CIO at the Fordham University in New York. Stan is the Vice President, is the Senior Vice President with the Aberdeen Group and is responsible for the development and deployment of Aberdeen's research in planning and advanced analytics with particular focus on the business intelligence and sales and operations planning processes and technologies. Dan has been deeply involved in the development and implementation of business intelligence and CPM processes and technologies in a variety of multinational corporations in industries as diverse as consumer packaged goods, petrochemicals, high-tech, and the pulp and paper industry. As a CIO of a global consumer packaged goods company, Stan also led the selection, value assessment, and implementation of a full SAP R Release 3 suite. Good morning, panel. Welcome to the show.
Morning.
Morning, Sandro, and thank you for inviting us.
Thanks for accepting the invitation. Now, how is business treating you in 2005?
Well, we're always looking for people who want to go further their education, and we're accepting applications as we speak.
Oh, wow. So how are things for you, Stan?
Well, I think what we've seen is a major change in the focus that people have certainly asked us in market research, in a sense from the 1990s, where there was, you know, people making a lot of new investment decisions and doing trade-offs, to a lot of companies have settled in to some degree, you know, the Fortune 5000, on who their prime ERP vendor is. And now the question is, what do I do about it? How do I get the value? What should I do differently? So we find the nature of the questions is very different, but the intensity of the questions has actually been stronger than it was before. People have made it. Have made very significant investments, and now the pressure is on to get value out of it.
Talking about investments, we have an 800-pound gorilla that I call as ERP. And, you know, with the world becoming smaller, when we are talking about Internet bringing everybody together, then we're talking about businesses more than taking care of things just internally. They are partnering like crazy, if you will, and they're going out and actually having their business outwards, it's focused outwards, and then you, on top of it, you've got this open source community gearing up to provide software for free. Now, with all that being going on, the honeymoon period that ERP solutions used to enjoy earlier, how can anyone or any organization justify their procurement or use or maintenance or even ongoing sustenance of such an ERP solution?
Sanjo, this is Walter. From a university perspective, and the University of Nebraska is approximately 50,000 students, about a $1.4 billion enterprise, and so we consider ourselves a larger institution in higher education. And we happen to believe that the ERP is a very good solution for us in the sense that it provides us with a good deal of standardization and uniformity across what used to be rather diverse and diversified campuses. We firmly believe in the notion of academic diversity. We think that's important, and that's something we support. But at the same time, given the realities of today, we believe in business. The business part of the operation should not be as diverse, and we should be looking for standardization and compatible systems. And with that in mind, we at the university went from literally multiple financial systems that were deployed to one. And so we have found the ERP solution in our case very good for us in how we manage our business.
This is Stan. I mean, one thing I think it's important to understand is that many people who went to ERP actually had multiple objectives in mind. Now, as Walter is saying, one of them of standardization and running the business and running the enterprise and basically making decisions. And there's analytical logic that's within the ERP solutions that help you take orders and do a lot of different things. And whatever you do, you're going to need some kind of analytical application framework, regardless of whether it's ERP or not, to simply continue to run the business. I think the area where the ERP systems are getting most challenged is exactly as you're saying, in the question of sharing information, in this notion of operating between diverse systems, and in the question of business intelligence and extracting value. This is what we're seeing as the major battlegrounds now as to whether the ERP systems going into the future become a commodity layer in a sense, but that the real action is happening in a sense outside of them in the decisions that you make with your partners. And that's what we see right now is that's probably the most intense battleground. But there doesn't seem to be as much question because most people's perception today is going from one ERP system to another as distinct from changing an ERP system to, let's say, a best of breed, which is an open discussion.
Again, I think whenever you change a system of this magnitude, this complexity, there has to be a very, very strong, compelling reason to do it. And unless that compelling reason is something that just stares you right in the face, you're probably not going to change. But we're also seeing that companies like SAP and others are moving into the commoditization piece of this, where they're providing some additional functionality that plugs into your existing ERP system. So we're seeing kind of the transformation in a respect from a rather rigid environment to one that is a lot more flexible.
So there are two points that come to my mind this time is based on your responses. One is that if you have a system which is mature, which is taking care of all your needs, which we feel are the needs at this time, it automatically stifles creativity or allows the people to think out of the box. Right? That is one thing that I see, which is going to be making everybody not go beyond what they are thinking their processes should be. And secondly, which I see is that the ERP solutions by themselves are becoming like a fabric of an organization. And whatever things that you need to do to really stay ahead of the curve is to be basically picked up by picking some other solutions and putting on top of it, like, you know, whether it's CRM or anything else that you want to do. Now, the challenges that come is that you are putting... If SAP is supposed providing more functionality, that means you're putting way too many eggs in the same basket, and the single point of failure issue becomes even more prominent. So how do you, what justifies doing that?
This is Stan. It's one of those interesting dialogues as to whether or not ERP systems in general are a straitjacket or a structured way to do things, because my experience has been that in a lot of cases there is flexibility within the ERP system to allow different parts of the business, different individuals to do things differently, assuming that you program it that way. But in many cases what companies have done is taken the easy way out to say, you know, we'll do one size fits all. That's not inherent in ERP. It's not inherent in Oracle or SAP or any of the others that you have to always do it the same way. So part of it gets to be, how well did the company understand what flexibility it needed to have and provide the capability, technically and otherwise, to allow creativity? It's absolutely true that not done well, it will stifle, but it's not axiomatic that it has to stifle. I think the other thing is that the definition of ERP has changed tremendously in the last 5 or 10 years. If you looked originally at it, it was execution systems, it was finance systems, it was operating systems. If you ask today who is the biggest vendors in CRM, the answer is the ERP players. It's not the Siebels. If you say who's the biggest vendors in supply chain management, it's not the I2s. I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm saying the reality is that the ERP footprint currently includes virtually all of the planning applications, the business intelligence applications, supplier relationship management, global trade. So the ERP footprint has become very large. And one thing to bear in mind of why the ERP had been successful is because what they do bring when done well is this integrated business process view that says that the decisions that you make, whether it's order to cash or whether it's global trade or whatever, you actually need to have the information from a variety of different perspectives and processes to make the right decision. And if you have alternate technologies or different applications that don't have the right way to share information, that it gets to be difficult to make bigger decisions. It's easy to make little decisions better with a lot of different technologies, but increasingly gets more difficult to make bigger decisions. So the hope I think that people had with ERP was that it would provide the flexibility. It hasn't so far, but the challenge has been that if you replace an ERP system with something that is, let's say, different but architecturally is going to provide you with the flexibility, will you still get integrated business processes? And I think exactly as Walter has said, people today are saying the value proposition has to be very clear to justify moving off the ERP platform. But I think there is increasing looking now because of something we'll get into, you know, system about the service-oriented architecture, which all of the big players are basically adopting, is specifically designed to allow them to interoperate with, let's say, better point solutions. That wasn't necessarily what they intended to have happen, but it does. So I think we're seeing perhaps a rebirth in specific areas of where additional technologies could be plugged in. You know, the hope of plug and play actually has some interesting probability or possibility with the SOA architecture that wasn't there before. And I should say that contrary to what one might have expected, the big players are actually one of the ones that are driving the SOA. You might have thought it was coming from the smaller players seeking to displace them, but I think they're smart enough to try to get ahead of the curve. And this, you know, just to sum up, I think this is one area where they have recognized exactly what you're saying. They're extremely vulnerable unless they begin to embed in their own architecture an ability to play with other applications, especially partners' applications. And so we see the Oracles, the SAPs, the Microsofts actually being some of the leaders in promoting standards to allow interoperability.
Let's take a quick break, listeners.
Sure.
We'll be right back, Walter. We will, of course, like to hear your very valuable comments on the same point that we raised. And we'll be right back, listeners, so please stay tuned.
Fresh, dynamic, and totally prepared for continuing business education. Business Talk Radio. Voice America Business at voiceamerica.com.
Looking for ways to improve your IT department? Then visit www.avval.com today. Aval is a professional services firm with a mission to help companies align IT with their business objectives through strategy, technology, branding solutions, and services. Our commitment is to ensure bottom-line improvements as a result of services rendered by us, whether it's an IT needs assessment, strategy development, or related implementation. We back it up by our unconditional, positive ROI guarantee. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, making IT work and look better. www.avval.com. Visit today.
Achieve total wealth management. Listen to Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roy Diefendorf every Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern on Business America Radio. Three-Dimensional Wealth is a show dedicated to teaching you a values-based approach to comprehensive total wealth management through practical strategies and expert advice. Take your first step down the road of financial independence. Listen to Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roy Diefendorf Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern, here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
What stock should I buy?
When is it time to sell?
Where do I turn for honest advice on my portfolio?
For the answers to these questions, tune in to Trading in Today's Markets with Oliver Alvarez and Greg Capra every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time. On the show, Oliver, Greg, and their guests will discuss the daily going-ons of Wall Street, as well as give you tips on how to identify the hottest sectors and trends in the market. Improve your portfolio. Listen to Trading in Today's Markets with Oliver Alvarez and Greg Capra, broadcast live on Business America Radio every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time.
Are your accounts stuck in bumper-to-bumper traffic? Are your finances flowing at 2 miles an hour? It's time to crank your cash into high gear by tuning in to Making Sense of Financial Nonsense with Bullseye Bruce Horowitz. Every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time, Bullseye Bruce will give you no-nonsense, common-sense financial advice that anyone can understand, as well as bring you clarity on some of the most complex and confusing financial issues today. So get out of that traffic jam and listen to Making Sense of Financial Nonsense every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
The Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
We now return to Managing Technology the Right Way. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free at 1-866-233-7861. Now back to the show. Here's Sun Jogal.
Welcome back to the show. For listeners who have just tuned in, today's topic is the changing landscape of ERP solutions, and our guests for today's show are Walter Weir and Stanley Elbaum. Walter is the Chief Information Officer with the University of Nebraska, and Stan is the Senior Vice President with the Aberdeen Group. Before the break, we quickly touched the two-part question that I raised based on the responses we got earlier, is that, one, there is a big-time challenge in terms of us trying to make ERP everything for everybody. So the best thing that could be potentially done is that make ERP as a core layer, and anything that you want to do to stay ahead of the curve could be just slapped on top of it. And if the ERP vendors are actually providing the same solutions which could be slapped on top, then there is also a potential risk that you're putting too many eggs in one basket. So Stan did provide us very valuable comments about the same, and Walter, please share your thoughts on the same, please.
Thank you. The thought that was going through my head, and I'm pretty much a pro-ERP person. I mean, I think we've received tremendous value from our investment in this. We put this system in back in 1999. We were very successful in putting it in, and we've actually reaped some very serious benefits. Now, the thought that was going through my mind is that, you know, Hillary Rodham Clinton wrote a book called It Takes a Village. And in the ERP community, we spend a lot of time in conferences. We have regional groups that work together to discuss new initiatives, new concepts, things you want to do with the system. And so it's because there are many, many customers in the SAP environment, we're able to, I think, be creative and also find solutions that we may not have thought of on our own. I think also that the technology that ERP provides, these systems are essentially rule-based, table-driven systems, and as a result of that, reconfiguring and making adjustments are significantly easier than they used to be in the past. Now, maybe we're not at a panacea point yet, but I think, all things considered, we find it rather easy to modify and become flexible with this system.
So let's look at the fact that, you know, ERP by nature was supposed to be dependent or rather built based on best practices that used to exist at the time when they started doing it. And maybe they, when they come out with a new release, they just do a sanity check against the best practices that exist. But the funny part is that the best practices, the definition of those changes as, you know, the same way like we have political discussions about which political party is in power. So they talk good things, and then when they go back, they talk about the same things as bad. So the same thing happens with the best practices, and so how do you manage the fact that the best practices yesterday are no longer relevant, and then you built your business around it, you're almost putting like cart ahead of the horse, where your business were to be, you know, tweaked, or business processes were to be tweaked to work with the ERP, and that was always a pet peeve of most of the CIOs. Now here, when we want to make our organizations agile and we want to move at a warp speed and a, you know, wink of an eye, then ERP might even become a bottleneck here, because change management from one thing to another is actually a key issue with ERP solutions.
This is Walter again. Let me just kick this one off. From a university perspective, we were just tickled with that phrase, and in fact, during the justification of this system, the concept of deploying best business practices was just kind of a manna from heaven, if you will. It was the key phrase that really enabled us to move forward. So for us, best business practices are a good thing. We went through the fit gap analysis where we looked at the various processes we do within a university, comparing that against quote-unquote best practices. And we found in some areas we had a very good match with that, and in some areas we didn't. But the fact that you use this term, and in fact when we talked about customization, we said, well, why would you want to deviate from a best business practice? That doesn't make any sense. And so a lot of our implementation effort was helped by the fact that we kept to that point of view.
Yes, this is Stan. I mean, I think that two thoughts just to bear in mind. The marketplace, and we all know this, is much more risky and complex, and the identification of what a best practice is much more complicated today than it was, and the reality is that the best companies recognize that the best practices change. You're absolutely right. That's a given. The question is, A, how do you know what is the best practice, and B, I mean, how do you basically implement it in a way that you're not going to blow the organization up? Because you can have individuals that are very creative, and they're doing all kind of wonderful things at the drop of a hat, but organizations become effective when the best practices are system-wide. They're not each individual doing their best things. You want to give individuals creativity, but then you want to capture what works. So one of the advantages of people who have been using ERP systems effectively, you know, as Walter has said, is they use them to capture the impact of trying different practices and quantifying the benefits and using them to prioritize which of the different practices we're trying are now the best practices. Because without some kind of system of record, without some analytical way to measure actual results against what you thought, then you can have a theoretical best practice. It isn't true. But let me add one other thing. This was my experience when I put in SAP, which is that what we thought was the best practice was based on a presumption of how we would run the business with this more structured way. And the answer was, in almost every case, we were wrong about what was the right way to do it. Not because the technology was rigid, but because until you begin to work with customers in different ways, until you begin to work with your employees in different ways, your theory of what the best practice is in many cases turns out to be invalid. And it's only by working, you know, in this kind of viral environment with a more flexible system, but still with a system, that you're able to actually have a more systemic way, if you want to call it, of moving towards best practices that you might not have even realized were best practices before you tried new technology.
Yeah, one of the things I find interesting is most of the implementations of these kinds of systems, the technology is not the difficult part. The difficult part is dealing with culture and dealing with the way people think and operate and have operated over time. And in fact, when we implemented SAP, that was probably one of our biggest areas of concern, was how do we modify and change the culture. And I know you've hit upon change management, and we can talk more about that later. The other thing that drives us in the best business practice arena is we have auditors, and auditors come in from time to time, as we all know, and they're looking for certain kinds of safeguards and risk reduction areas. And so the closer you stay to a quote-unquote uniform best business practice that they also agree with, the better off you're going to be, I think, in the long run for many reasons.
Now, at any given time, we always know that if you put the same thing across the board, and especially true with ERP, is that across an industry, you try to put same set of solutions, and we say that since it's based on best practice, that's the best way to go versus trying to tweak the hell out of it. Then we are consistent, but consistency also takes, there's a risk with consistency across the industry players, is because lately IT has been used, or is being at least thought to be used, to provide some competitive advantage based on how it's been implemented. And given the fact that there's a standard ERP solution where we are not trying to deviate much, where is the competitive advantage? It takes away that advantage right there. So while it might be an abstract thought, but it might have some substance to it.
Well, at the university, one of the things that was a benefit, and you might want to tailor this to competitive advantage, was with the ERP system, we were now able to do an awful lot better job of data modeling. We knew where data was in the system versus in our older systems, we didn't always know where the data was, and so we may find ourselves duplicating data. We also had data dictionaries that we didn't have before. So there were a number of tool sets and concepts that were part of the ERP solution that actually help us in the development of change and providing change within the system in a relatively quick manner.
You know, it's true that any technology can only give you a finite number of options, and you're absolutely right when you say you're not going to change the source code. I mean, very few people go in and are going to change the source code. Having said that, as you know, you look at SAP, it's got 10,000 configurable tables. And having been in with the implementations of, for example, Procter & Gamble, Johnson & Johnson, and Unilever, they're all using SAP, and they use it completely differently because they reconfigure, as Walter was saying, the tables completely differently. So just because it's a given technology, and even if they have starting templates, companies can create competitive advantage by configuring them in very different ways based on where their competitive strengths are. So, for example, there's maybe 200 different ways. I'm using SAP as an example. It's true in Oracle, it's true in other systems. Over 200 different ways in which you can manage inventory at any one point. So is it likely that within that 200 companies can actually do things very differently? The answer is yes. Now, if the entire industry decided to do things exactly the same way, it would be rigid. I would actually argue that the ERP systems are much more flexible than what they replaced. What they replaced were systems that basically gave you one or two choices, ERP systems generally. I mean, that's been one of the challenges. The challenges that I've heard is people say, I've got too many choices. I've got to make so many decisions on the 10,000 tables, it's hard to keep perspective of where the value is, but I certainly have choices.
I also think that, somebody mentioned this earlier, that the ERP system really is the backbone of the organization. I mean, in terms of the e-business or e-commerce infrastructural strategy. But I think, you know, as we talked earlier, the focus needs to be a bit beyond ERP, and that links to the Internet, giving access to applications through browser-based portals and those kinds of applications, I think, are going to be much more prevalent. An example I read recently was this, envision this Japanese employee of a German company hunched over his Palm Pilot in a remote town in northern Japan. He's sitting there querying his Tokyo office about the availability and delivery times for a certain kind of bolt. Within seconds, he gets his answer, checks on the credit history of the customer, downloads information on related products. Within minutes, he makes the sale and he's on his way. So mobile computing, Internet access, accessing the enterprise resource system over the Internet is something we're going to see more and more of, and I think the ERP systems do provide that basic foundation that enables that to happen.
So let's look at the support side of ERP. Yes, you know, implementation definitely is a mega project, and millions of dollars are spent on that, and God willing, if everything is successful, then we are able to make sure that, you know, the support, ongoing support is done, but usually that comes at a big price tag too. So people are talking about not only the price, but also about the issues that they have in terms of how much of a pain it is to maintain it in-house versus outsourcing it. So let's take a quick break. We'll be right back after these messages and talk about the support, what can be done to best support ERP so that actual minimal pain and minimal cost is spent on that.
Get dialed in 1-866-233-7861. Up to the minute business talk. Voice America Business at voiceamerica.com.
Ever seen a hornet, Shelly?
No, ma'am.
Oh, well, you're five. What are you waiting for? They've built a nest outside your window. See?
No.
You will when you climb 15 feet up this ladder to get rid of them. Take this insecticide and broom and send those stinging meanies packing.
What if I fall? I could get hurt.
Oh, you know about gravity already. You're so smart. Oh, go, 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 go. The hornets are waiting. Them, dear. Hornets hate high-pitched noises. Yeah, try not to swallow too many.
Get away!
Knock that nest out of the park.
You wouldn't treat your child like an adult, so why put them in adult seat belts? If they're under 4 foot nine, they need a booster seat.
I can't see! Are they biting me?
Oh, that's so cute. No, honey, hornets don't bite, silly. They sting.
Ow!
For more information, go to boosterseat.gov. This message brought to you by the Ad Council and the U.S. Department of Transportation.
Looking for ways to improve your IT department? Then visit www.avval.com today. Avval is a professional services firm with a mission to help companies align IT with their business objectives through strategy, technology, branding solutions, and services. Our commitment is to ensure bottom-line improvements as a result of services rendered by us, whether it's an IT needs assessment, strategy development, or related implementation. We back it up by our unconditional, positive ROI guarantee. To find out how Avval can help your company, visit www.avval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Avval, making IT work and look better. www.avval.com. Visit today.
Business information you need. From the stock market to starting and managing your business. Voice America Business at voiceamerica.com.
Are you looking for a unique perspective on today's market from an experienced economist? Well, look no further. Listen to The Economic Contrarian with host Mike Norman every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time on Business America Radio. Mike and his guests will discuss new trends in the marketplace, as well as emerging companies and opportunities. So if you want in-depth analysis from a contrarian point of view, don't miss The Economic Contrarian Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific Time right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business. This is Voice America Business.
Welcome back to Managing Technology the Right Way with Sun Jogal. Call in with your questions at 1-866-233-7861. Now back to the show. Here's Sun Jogal.
Welcome back to the show, folks. For listeners who just tuned in, today's topic is the changing landscape of ERP solutions, and our guests for today's show are Walter Veer and Stanley Elbaum. Walter is the Chief Information Officer with the University of Nebraska, and Stan is the Senior Vice President with the Aberdeen Group. Before the break, we actually started talking about ongoing support and maintenance of ERP solutions, and it's a big issue, a lot of gray areas in there. So I think a good idea would be to start. Stan, why don't you take a stab at it and tell us what you feel about the support issues?
Yeah, just mentioning that if you look at the attention that people spend, the business case that they develop, and they're very careful about where the business value is when they buy the ERP solution in the first place, and then we see the classical thing is somebody then writes a check for 17% to 20% of the install cost, basically on a maintenance contract, and don't think about it quite that seriously, like we have to do it. I think if you look at, for example, when people decide whether they're going to upgrade Microsoft to a new generation, people look pretty hard at it, whether the business value is, and that's a pretty trivial investment compared to an ERP system. I think the most critical thing is to say, do we really need it? I mean, what part, do we really understand what that maintenance package is for that upgrade? Do we really understand what we need? Do we understand why we're paying it? And our research indicates that half the time, at least half the dollars people are spending, they're not really requiring those upgrades, but either because the technology of the ERP is such that you take it all or you take nothing, or because they haven't really spent the attention. So my recommendation is you put the pressure. We're beginning to see modularization now, but you put the pressure on the vendors to give you the choice and to also do the business case yourself, a kind of a mini version on an annual basis of what you did when you bought it in the first case. Does it really pay? And you may find out that your maintenance costs go way down because you actually don't need nearly that kind of a support. Now, outsourcing versus doing it yourself, I think, again, this becomes a question of which parts of the ERP system are so mission critical from a business operations point of view that you have to personally maintain control of the business logic. I'm not talking about the technical. So separated into two pieces. One is, do you want to outsource the IT function in a sense of running the mechanics of the system? The different question of whether you want to actually outsource the upgrades, and this comes back to the question, companies that really use the ERP system, as Walter was saying, to run their business effectively and are trying to create competitive advantage are much more reluctant to, quote, outsource because they still need to provide the business thinking to decide how to reconfigure the system new, and that's something that you can't outsource.
This is Walter. A couple of things, Edison. I agree with Stan on the notion of the components and not having to upgrade the entire system. I do believe SAP first introduced a set of Internet components back in about 1996, if I'm not mistaken, allowing a number of users to access components on the web. But, you know, components or modules can be a double-edged sword, both for the users and the vendors. And I would agree, although the benefits appear to outweigh the drawbacks for both, components promise to break the costly and disruptive upgrade cycle. I tend to agree with that. And organizations would be able to upgrade the functionality they want by upgrading individual components, while the vendors ensure both backward and forward compatibility among the systems consisting of multiple components at different release levels. However, on the other side of that, components or modules in general, and selective upgrading in particular, does increase the complexity of the deployment, and I think adds some major managerial complications. Going back to the other comment on the in-house or outsourcing, again, we do not outsource our support of SAP. We do that in-house. And my belief is, you know, outsourcing has a role in certain areas. The key to good outsourcing is a good contract, because how well that performs is a function of how well that contract was written. And I also believe that we have situations, at least at Nebraska, where our people will work round the clock to get a problem fixed, whereas a vendor or an outsourcer may do that, but they're of course going to charge you whatever that freight is. So we're rather intent on keeping our maintenance support in-house.
So when we talk about, you know, the plug and play, and we talk about different ERP vendors providing their own, you can say, plug and play components. And then we are automatically, you can say, inclined to use their own because then there would be fewer integration issues. But the fact that it's a plug-and-play, it defeats the very purpose, and you should be able to go out to any other application and should be able to, you know, handle that integration fairly smoothly. But it doesn't happen. So do you think ERP vendors are waking up and saying that, you know, while we would like to cross-sell and upsell, but it's a genuine problem that customers are facing, and they're getting negative PR for that?
I think my belief, this is Walter, my belief is that they are paying attention to the service-oriented architecture that Stan talked about, and they are going to have to come to grips with that and provide the tools and the necessary resources to make sure that happens.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we should be aware of, and I think Walter had mentioned this, is that the ERP players themselves are actually thinking much more in the lines of the IBM of the 1980s, that what they're providing is an entire development architecture, including applications, and that they're trying to bring other vendors, you know, sort of into their constellation of value. So there's a fight right now for the third-party vendors to kind of sign up with one or the other of the major players so that, on the one hand, you as a buyer would have the flexibility to buy third-party solutions. On the other hand, from the ERP player's point of view, they're trying to corral the best of them, not necessarily buy them, but bring them inside their architecture. So, I mean, I've heard plug and play. We've all heard it for 20 years. Object-oriented architecture was supposed to bring it 20 years ago. I mean, it hasn't happened. Plug and play, the problem with plug and play traditionally has been data transfer is as hard as it is easy. Actually, it's not the hard problem. The hard problem is, can you plug and play the business logic? Can you plug and play a business process where a new application is actually part of a larger set of decisions you want to make? All applications generally are designed to make decisions within their own boundaries. They may get data from somewhere else, but within their own boundaries.
Well, so, you know, one of the things that happened out here in Nebraska was we're an SAP environment, and our state went with J.D. Edwards.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's interesting because if the university went left, then they're going to go right. But suffice it to say, they went out and purchased J.D. Edwards. And then you have the big fish eating the little fish model, where PeopleSoft comes in and buys up and eats J.D. Edwards, and then Oracle comes in and bites up and eats up PeopleSoft. And so now, who do you turn to? What are the issues associated with that? And it creates some real problems for us.
And that's exactly what my next question is, that how do we handle special situations where you got one 800-pound gorilla and eating up another 800-pound gorilla, and here you got two different company which used to have. That is one problem. Another is that you are having Oracle at your end, and you merge or acquire a company which has got yet another ERP. That is a second flavor of the same problem. How do you bring these things together?
That's a very good question, and I think it's one that, one of the things that keep CIOs up late at night, and I think that's part of it. Acquisitions and mergers are becoming more and more commonplace. I mean, we all recognize that. But these organizations aren't really dumb. You know, they realize the importance of maintaining and building customer bases and these merged products, and I believe we'll go to great lengths to support them. And it will only be over a period of time and transition, which many result in combined or phased out products, that we'll actually see some change. Yet my belief is there's no question that it creates sufficient concern in the marketplace and with us. So, your point is well taken, and it's an area of major concern to all of us.
You know, one of the things, just to make 2 points off what Walter was saying, one of the things was, if you look at, for example, what Oracle is doing, and others have done the same thing in their acquisition strategy, historically when people acquired another company, they kind of left it as a separate unit, so you had a problem. Today, because they're driving towards a common development platform, every major company that acquires another company finds a way through middleware or otherware, through SOA or something, to basically allow you to merge and align the core definition of customers and everything else, right? The master files. This number one is to make sure that you can talk to each other. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're forcing the acquired company to adopt theirs. They're meaning they can talk to each other. This is kind of the number one thing every acquiring company has to do, exactly for the reason that you're talking about, because they can't afford to have them operate, you know, separately. And I think that what you're seeing also, again, with this service-oriented architecture, is a real effort on the part of the major vendors to allow you to reach out and align different systems, at least align different systems for sharing information, for being able to translate information from one place to another, to know whether it's the same customer, to know whether it's the same delivery. And that problem, I don't say it's being solved. I think it's one of the ones that the major players are working on the most aggressively, along with the middleware players, because that is the world of the future. But the alternative, if you look at it and say, well, technologically, if you don't like what the ERP players are doing, what would you do? You've got middleware options, right? I mean, you can still buy middleware, TIBCO or whatever, that actually can act as a buffer between the two, so you're not completely relying on the ERP solutions. And those seem to be the two major plays that you have to align. You know, that's different from saying we're going to convert. I think what used to have people said, we're going to convert everything to SAP, or we're going to convert everything to Oracle. And that's no longer feasible, but can we talk to each other?
Right? Stan's right on that. And, in fact, one of the things we've done here at the university, because we have...
Walter, can we take a quick break?
Sure.
And we will be right back, listeners, after these messages, and we'll continue our thoughts.
More and more people are starting their day with informative, focused business talk. Top experts. Today's business issues. Voice America Business at voiceamerica.com.
Looking for ways to improve your IT department? Then visit www.avval.com today. Aval is a professional services firm with a mission to help companies align IT with their business objectives through strategy, technology, branding solutions, and services. Our commitment is to ensure bottom-line improvements as a result of services rendered by us, whether it's an IT needs assessment, strategy development, or related implementation. We back it up by our unconditional, positive ROI guarantee. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, making IT work and look better. www.avval.com. Visit today.
Win with effective marketing. Win with proper positioning and branding. Win with Dick McDonald on his show Win-Win Marketing for Buyers and Sellers every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time. On the show, we will discuss the challenges and common mistakes made in today's industry while providing you insight on what you can do to avoid these pitfalls. Get ahead with effective marketing in today's world. Listen to Win-Win Marketing for Sellers and Buyers with Dick McDonald, heard every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, here on the Bottom Line of Business, businessamericaradio.com.
Are you feeling slammed and suckered in today's stock market? If so, then you need to tune in to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, Jordan Kimmel will train you in what you can do to beat up the big boys on Wall Street, as well as share his secrets to success so that you can buy and sell like a profit-pumping pro. Grab the bull market by the horns and listen to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
The Bottom Line in Business Talk. Voice America Business.
We now return to Managing Technology the Right Way. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free at 1-866-233-7861. Now back to the show. Here's Sun Jogal.
Welcome back to the show, folks. For listeners who have just tuned in, today's topic is the changing landscape of ERP solutions. Our guests for today's show are Walter Weir and Stanley Elbaum. Walter is the Chief Information Officer with the University of Nebraska, and Stan is the Senior Vice President with the Aberdeen Group. Before the break, we started a topic, and Walter, I just had to cut you off because my engineer was asking me to do that. So let's go ahead and share your thoughts.
Yeah, Stan was talking about the fact that we still have some information from different systems as we go through these mergers and acquisitions, and how do we determine at what point do we pull it all under one or leave it with two or whatever the case may be. One of the things at the university, we have silo systems as well. Our ERP is primarily HR and financials, but we also have student information systems. And so a lot of the things that we want to do from a executive information system perspective are to merge information from both of those systems to make decisions. And so we've been using things like our data warehouse as a vehicle to pull data both from the ERP and from these separate silo systems to make good value judgments. I think the notion of common data is something that plagues us all, especially, and it gets very difficult in those mergers and acquisition issues. And that's something that takes quite a bit of effort and work to resolve. But we found that we've not had an awful lot of difficulty, at least our experiences in that. It's a time-consuming process, but we haven't found that the ERP has caused us any necessary restrictions in that area.
Let's quickly talk about the compliance issues. You know, everybody is facing these multiple compliance mandates from the government, and they're spending a lot of money. Now, ERP by itself, by definition, it is like a black box. While they say that, yeah, they're service-oriented architecture, everything, but still it is a black box. And we talk about compliance that automatically implies that we have to give 100% transparency of whatever is going on. So do you think ERP at this time is all set to be able to deliver the compliance-related, allow organizations to comply with these different mandates? Walter?
I guess I never viewed an ERP as a black box, but rather a way of doing business. And if you recall, ERP systems have evolved from what used to be called the manufacturing resource planning systems, where the objective was just-in-time inventory and just-in-time manufacturing. But I think we learned after a few difficult years that the entire organization was a living entity, that departments didn't function independent of one another, and if we were to affect change across the organization, that we needed to first acknowledge that HR decisions impact facilities and purchasing and sales decisions impact manufacturing, assembly, and post-sale support. To look at just one department for regulatory compliance is like only looking at your leg when your leg hurts without acknowledging or understanding that often your back causes you to have leg pain.
So, you know, it seems to me that the ERP systems actually are very good at documenting, for example, the flow of a transaction. But in a lot of case, Sarbanes-Oxley, they want to know what was the logic that you used to decide, for example, what the discounts are. Now, theoretically, in an ERP system, if you chose to do it, there's an ability to attach comments and a lot of other things. Very few companies did it. So today, they're now faced with a situation where they actually have a pretty good documentation of what and a very weak documentation of why or how. And so the other answer gets to be, well, would you put in a whole new technology for the purpose of documenting your whys, or would you find a way to go back to your ERP system and, enhance their capability to be able to do both requirements from the Sarbanes-Oxley point of view. And this is a big challenge because it's a big change from the way people have used the system. It's not inherent in the ERP system that it can't do it. It's kind of inherent in the way none of us like to document. And at the time, this seemed like not a particularly useful reason to extend the implementation by documentation.
Yeah,
by the way, I was going to say one other thing. We found a lot of new systems coming up, just to your point about new systems coming and sitting on top of the ERP systems that were designed from the ground up specifically to manage the process of the way the decisions were made, and we found that those systems go through a Sarbanes-Oxley audit with absolutely no problems and no changes, and they've actually been used to allow them not to have to make changes in the ERP system. And they're very cheap compared to, let's say, a old ERP system. So
at the university, we're not necessarily bound by SOC, so you know it's a little bit different model over here. But we do pay attention to it, and we view SOC as an idea to reduce risk, reduce errors, inhibit fraud, provide transparent, equal access, those kinds of things. Now, one of the things we've done, and when you add additional third-party software to your ERP, I mean, I can go to SAP and get copies of the source code and documentation and find out what's going on in a particular area, and our auditors do that. They have the ability to talk to the SAP people and say, what is the rationale business rule behind this particular activity? We also find that when we add third-party vendors to an ERP system, that brings another level of complexity in, and do we have the same level of access to source code and documentation that tells us what's going on between that application and the ERP. Now, one of the things the university's been doing is we're actually doing some research into re-engineering or back-end re-engineering of software, where we have systems now that will go in and actually almost produce for you the documentation of what that source code is attempting to do. I remember there was a company called AMS when I was in New York, and I actually sued them at one point. And part of it was over this issue of documentation. There was a piece of code where we were trying to figure out what they were doing, and the code basically said, well, here's where we check the time and other stuff. And I said, well, that's not very clear. So we found, at least with SAP, some very good documentation support when necessary and when needed. And I'll also tell you that we're, as I said, the university is trying to do research in this area, in the sense of going back and really finding out what are the business rules and what are the documentation issues associated with code that's already developed.
One last, actually, what we should do is just very quickly, we should talk about that. Do you think we are on a path where the vendors are also looking towards making this as a system which the organization will be able to embrace, or even go ahead and make a decision on not just supporting but even procuring a brand new ERP solution?
The thought of acquiring a new ERP solution is petrifying to me. Again, ours has been in now for about 4 years, 5 years. We're actually quite content with it, to be honest with you. We've not had anything that we've wanted to do that we've been unable to do. So we're relatively happy at this point. It's doing everything it claimed it was going to do.
You know, and I think, again, ERPs, as you both said, is a very, very complex application. And you look at what companies are trying to do, inherently it's a very complex technological and other way to do it. Most companies that have an existing ERP system who might be tempted, they can see some problems. They look at another, let's say, large ERP system, and what's running through their mind is, what makes me think that the other one won't have other problems that I'm currently okay with? I mean, coming back to Walter's point, how do I really know I've got a tremendously compelling business value case? And alternatively, if I, quote, don't like ERP systems for doing that mass of the work, what is my alternative? I mean, am I really going to go back to best of breed and knit something together? So it's a very challenging case, I believe, today to make to actually replace an ERP system for what it does well.
And one of the things at a university, you know, you always hear about open source, and my thing is academic computing is interesting. Business computing needs to be more ruggedized and standardized and locked down. The open source community, and we do a lot of work with open source. We work with a company called Sakai, which is a Michigan, Stanford, MIT project on the distance learning and education piece.
Walter, I'm so sorry, but my engineer is saying that we need to wrap up the show.
Okay.
So I know we can always talk about this at great length, but I would just like to thank you and Stan for sharing your thoughts and insights about how ERP solutions can evolve with changing times to make and actually deliver real value for organizations. Thank you so much for participating.
Thank you very much for putting the show on.
Thank you, Sanjeev.
Thank you for tuning in to Managing Technology the Right Way. Please join Sun Jogal next Friday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time right here on